I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
Tim is a healthy adult who represents no danger to himself or anyone else. And I believe he should be discharged.
Hey, little brother.
I found it.
What do you mean?
We only have a few days.
A few days for what?
To keep our promise and kill it.
My name is Kaylee Ann Russell. The purpose of today's experiment is to prove that the object behind me is responsible for at least 45 deaths in the 4 centuries of its recorded existence.
Hello and welcome. Welcome, welcome out there in podcast YouTube land. However, you're reaching out to Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast and YouTube channel where we get together, we talk about horror movies, science fiction movies, sometimes novels, sometimes television series, sometimes crazy stuff that just distracts us and we just go off on tangents because we are totally unscripted and that's the way we roll. If you're new to us, welcome. We're really glad you are here. We'd love to see and hear about new faces. So let us know how you found us down there in the comments. Give us what you think of the show. We hope you enjoy it. If you're coming back, obviously you might have enjoyed it or enjoyed something, or you like the particular topic we're talking about. We try to do this on a fairly decent schedule, and we have about 4+ years of it on our website and on our Patreon and all of that. So if you like today's episode, you can go back and find other movies and television episodes that you might like and like to get our kind of strange bent on it. My name is David. I'm here with my co-host and super friend, Tim. Tim, how have you been? What's the week been like? You been doing anything fun?
Well, yeah, I've been watching a lot of stuff, but I watched one that I thought I should talk about. Because this movie scared the fuck out of me. It is called Last Shift.
Last Shift, okay.
Yeah, it gets really high rankings on Rotten Tomatoes. It's written and directed by a guy named Anthony DeBlasi. The only other thing I've seen of his is this movie was made in 2014. He has already, excuse me, remade it into a 2023 movie called Malum. Don't ask me why he would take a movie he did almost 10 years earlier and already remake it, but he did. And it is pale by comparison to the original.
You watched both?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did. But this is the one I wanted to talk about.
Well, if you are listening to us on your podcast, you're not seeing Tim's poster behind him. So maybe jump over to YouTube and look at it. But the poster is very Ring Korean zombie scary
satanic
saw.
Something
satanic,
yeah,
something. Yeah, that's a it's an impressive poster. It's black, yeah, and white. That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of different posters for it out there. There's one where a woman's got like those pentagrams carved into her face. But anyway, lovely. The cast is great. It stars just primarily a couple of people, Juliana Harkavy and Joshua McKell. The synopsis is a rookie police officer is assigned to guard a soon-to-be-closed station on her first solo night shift. What begins as a quiet routine assignment quickly spirals into a terrifying ordeal as she encounters disturbing phenomena linked to a cult's grisly past. Alone and increasingly haunted, she must confront chilling supernatural forces that blur the line between reality and nightmare. So basically, yeah, you've got her in what appears to be this old police station by herself, and shit starts happening as if it's haunted. And very, very scary. I'm not going to give anything away. I put it on our list immediately. I almost chose it for this season because this is the second time I've watched it. And I don't know. It'll probably make the rounds eventually. It gets 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Of course, it only has a few reviews, so I don't know if that's an accurate ranking. Like I said, scary as fuck. I wrote in my notes that I would probably knock it down to a 90 because there is some logic questions in it, which usually happens with horror movies. So, but it's definitely on our list, and that's what I did in my genre week.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like an occult version of Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Less people. Yeah.
I am continuing since my schedule's been so crazy and erratic lately, I'm continuing my audiobook adventures. And on a whim, I picked up Andy Weir's new novel, or not new, it's his second novel called Project Hail Mary. I liked The Martian. I thought The Martian was a great film. I thought The Martian was a good book. So I thought, this will be interesting, especially since people were talking about how funny it was. And I remember The Martian and the humor, the sense of humor in The Martian I really liked. But so this book is probably one of my favorite books I have read in a long time. It is so good. And so well done, so well plotted. One of the best voice actors I've ever heard in a audiobook. He does like 10 different accents in it. His meter is great. His tempo is great. Pacing, everything works really well. The emotional content is all there. Because similar to The Martian, it's almost like a first-person point of view all the way through it. And not giving anything away, it's basically the story plot line for it is that the Earth's sun starts to die because of this unknown microorganism that is stealing all the heat from the sun. So the Earth is starting to cool and having some anti-climate change areas. And within probably 25, 30 years, it'll be totally destroyed, change all life on Earth. So they try to come up with a mission to save the sun. And it involves going to Tau Ceti, which is a distant star from us, about 16 light years away. And basically, they're picking people on a suicide mission to go there, figure out the problem, and send back the answer remotely, because they know they'll never make it back in time before the Earth is destroyed, sort of thing. So it's this guy who wakes up on a spaceship with amnesia. He doesn't remember where he is, why he's here, anything, how to fly the ship, how to do anything. And he slowly realizes the plot as it goes along. It is so well done and so amazing. And I just found out day before yesterday, they have already filmed the film version of it. And it's going to be released this year. And Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, is the lead in it.
Does he get amnesia from cryo freeze or something?
You don't know why. Yes. He awakes from a coma, an induced coma, if that makes sense. But it's just his sense of humor is great. The way it's done is great. I cannot praise this movie. Ryan, who's in the movie? Ryan Gosling. Sorry.
Ryan
Gosling. So, and it'll be like a Matt Damon thing. He'll have a great deal of solo stuff by himself if they stay true to the book.
Is the movie also called Project Hail Mary?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I'm curious. I saw that book on that audiobook on sale. I wonder if it's still on sale. I may want to grab it.
That's kind of why I picked it up. I was like, I liked Martian. It was okay. Let me see.
Was it on Chirp or Audible?
Audible.
Okay, I'll have to check it
out.
But
the reader is phenomenal. Seriously, one of the best I have ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, I have several favorites. I noticed there's a new Mueller out there, and I think it's – and he's reading the new Stephen King, which I just picked up. And okay. I'm wondering if that's a descendant of Frank Mueller, who used to read Stephen King and got killed in a motorcycle accident.
Maybe. I think it's interesting. I also like the fact that they didn't – we've talked about audiobooks on a separate podcast, but I like the fact that they didn't dramatize this. You know, how a lot of them now have started to go more toward dramatizations.
Yeah, I don't want
multiple
that.
Multiple readers and sound effects and all
no,
that.
I want the book.
And sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. I liked two of the Straczynskis that were done that way. But then there was another one that I went, ugh. It was just, it was bad casting and bad audio and music. And everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, I went to a distant star trying to save the planet.
You did. And I went to the scary police precinct that's closing.
Yeah.
And this movie has absolutely nothing to do with either one of those. However, it is pretty scary.
Yes.
And it is a haunted mirror. I want to say haunted house, but it's really a haunted mirror story. We're going to cover today, we're going to cover Mike Flanagan's 2013 film, Oculus. If you read our little caption before you're viewing this, you already know that. All right, let me try to synopsize this. This is going to take a little bit of an effort. This is a film that takes place in it's two storylines, 11 years apart, dealing with two kids named Kaylee and Tim. Basically, when they were kids, they moved into this house with their parents. The dad buys this haunted mirror. Really weird shit starts happening. And basically, the father ends up becoming somewhat psychotic. The mother is even more animalistic and ends up being chained in the bedroom by the father because they're both possessed by this mirror. And the kids are helpless, basically. They can't even reach out to neighbors because the father finds out and will do bad things to them. And they end up, the father ends up killing the mother, and the father ends up killing himself, but he, with the aid of the child, the boy child, Tim's finger on the trigger. So Tim immediately goes to psychiatric. This is off camera. Psychiatric care, and Kaylee is now grown and an auction house representative. The present story is Tim being released from that psychiatric care where he has been convinced that he actually did kill his father, but that it was under duress and that there was no supernatural happenings. Mm-hmm. Well, Kaylee she never accepted that at all. She has been pursuing this mirror and has a chance to have it for a couple of days before it goes to a bidder that bid millions of dollars for it or whatever. And she is going to prove that it is a haunted mirror before she has this kill switch that's going to destroy it. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens, I guess I could go ahead and tell the end, is that the mirror starts playing with them as well. Tim is not convinced at first that it's supernatural, but he becomes convinced and he ends up pulling the kill switch, not seeing that Kaylee is in front of the mirror, and she ends up getting killed and he ends up getting carted off by the police again because he murdered his sister, which he really didn't do because the mirror is haunted. Wow. Mm-hmm. So there is your synopsis. I couldn't read a little clean synopsis because there's too many plots, two plots parallel. It's not nonlinear, one of my favorite types of storytelling, but I do love the parallel structure. It is a Mike Flanagan film, and he is a superior director at doing these type of movies because Hill House is basically the exact same thing.
Yep. Yeah, that's a huge key to this is Hill House.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you had not seen this?
Had never, ever seen it before. And I really, really liked it.
Yeah. It's scary.
I liked the cast. I liked the jump, the scares in it. I liked the story itself. Of course, I liked Flanagan's direction. One of my notes is, if this had been my introduction to Flanagan, which it was to a lot of people, I would have really wanted to follow this guy. Not only for the direction, but he wrote it too. And so I really liked the structure, the going back and forth in time, the time shifts, or what I call time shifts or perception shifts, which is what the mirror does to them. Like, it'll cut and something will be weird in the room. They'll go back and look at a videotape and realize that they were the ones that really did it, but they have no memory of it.
Right.
So I love stuff like that. That was really intriguing. Hard to tell and do visually, I think, and in a realistic way sort of thing. But I thought he did a really good job. And I really wanted to shout out to Flanagan and Jeff Howard was the other guy. And together, their credits include Gerald's Game, Hill House, and Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. So evidently, they are really good writing partners.
Yeah, I've got right here, frequent collaborator, Jeff Howard.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I was very, very impressed with this movie.
Yeah, and artistically, and I guess I can do a little bit of background, but we can sort of merge with scenes. Artistically, the editing is off the charts in this movie. Mm-hmm. And very much like Hill House, where Tim, the adult Tim, will all of a sudden see child Tim walk into a room, and all of a sudden you're in the past, and you're like, he just overlapped the timelines just mm-hmm. for artistic reasons. I was like, this is great. This is really, really cool.
Yeah, some of those segues are really cool. Or when he does it for jump, not scare, but for startling effect, when they think they're seeing something from the past, or you're there visualizing from the past, and suddenly it cuts and you're in the present and everything's dark and no furniture and scary. Mm-hmm. And yeah, really, really cool. Because I don't think you said in the synopsis, they actually go back to their original house, which hasn't been used in, what, 20 years or whatever.
Right. And that's where she has set up the mirror and the kill switch and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so the whole embracing, trying to corroborate the occult and catch and destroy the evil was a really cool subplot to all this, too.
Yeah. I'm shocked that there hasn't been sequels to this movie, because it would be really easy to continue with the plot of the mirror, because you could just do different casts.
Well, my trivia search says that he actually has this mirror in several other projects. It's actually, it is in one episode of Hill House.
I know. The mirror is kind of like Sam Raimi's car. Yeah, it turns up in almost everything he's filmed as sort of a little in joke or Easter egg. Yeah. But I'm talking about just sequels in general. Other directors, he could have sold the rights to this and let other people just make movies. Very similar to like James Wan and The Conjuring doing all those other spinoffs and stuff. He could have easily done that. But Flanagan is, we are large admirers of him for not doing stuff like that, because he did not get famous from this movie, but Netflix, I would say, was his big break with Hill House.
Yeah, and even if he wanted to make a prequel with The Lasser Glass itself, mm-hmm. tell its story, you could do that.
And make it a period piece, like back in time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let's call up, what's his name that does the period pieces? The 80s.
Ty West.
Ty West. Tell him to do it.
That's funny. A little bit of background. It was filmed in October of 2012. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in September of 2013, but was not given a release until 2014. That's why it's...
I have 2013.
No, yeah, 2013 is... That's because it was released early. That's okay. How they do things on IMDb. If it came out at a festival a year prior, that is the official release date. So it is a 2013 film, even though it wasn't released until 2014. I've also got that had director Mike Flanagan agreed to film this movie in the found footage genre, like Paranormal Activity, a number of studios would have backed it as early as 2006, and he refused.
Yes, I have that in my notes too. Yes, thank you, Mike.
It makes me think he doesn't like that genre as much as we don't like that genre
of film. Probably.
So that's what I had for background. We can move on to scenes unless you have something.
No, I think that's it for as far as production goes on. I didn't find a lot of production notes sort of thing.
I've got that it was written by Mike and Jeff, and that there was another guy, Jeff Seidman, who was primarily an editor.
Mm-hmm.
and that it was based on a short screenplay. They made like a short film of this when they were students or kids or something too. So it was based on a short film they did. They expanded it.
Oh, that's very Evil Dead.
Yeah, yeah, very Evil Dead. That's a good key, actually.
I did not know that, so that's a good key. I think scene-wise, of course, the scene, the one scene that just still makes me cringe is the light bulb scene in this, of course. It's almost like, again, Evil Dead, the newest version of Evil Dead Rise. And also Fatal Attraction. Final Destination, the new one that came out this year, all about the glass in the ice at the bartender.
I haven't seen that, so I didn't know about it.
So putting glass in your mouth, never a good thing anyway, but definitely the way he shoots this, I was going, oh my gosh. And then it turns out to not be real. I went, whew, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I love how he teases it leading up to it. Because it's one of those Alfred Hitchcock situations where you're aware.
As soon as
she
sets it down in the foreground and you go, oh, no.
There's
oh,
a
no.
big right light bulb right next to it.
Right beside the apple. And you're going, no.
It's very much like that movie I was talking about, Notorious, where you see the cup on the table and it's so huge.
Yes.
You just know she's going to be poisoned. Other scenes? God.
The one I really liked was... the edit, and this goes back to your editing comment, the editing and past and present cutting back and forth and back and forth when she accidentally kills her boyfriend. That was a really cool sequence.
Her fiance, I think.
Yeah, her fiance.
Yeah.
So that was memorable.
And she thinks she's stabbing the ghost of Marisol or her mother, one. I can't remember. And she stabs her... in the neck, and it just cuts, and you realize she's actually stabbed her fiance in the neck.
Yeah. And he's got that surprised expression, like, what?
Why? But again, you don't know if it's real, like the apple.
It takes a few minutes before you realize, oh, no, that really did it.
That really did happen.
And I like the fact, because that's in the last third, and we were at a point then when he could really have fed us anything, and we would have either believed it or been suspicious of it. You know what I mean? He throws you off so much that you're not sure the anchor's coming back. The kill switch is going to be used. It's a huge plant.
It's a MacGuffin. But, yeah.
But you're going, who's going to buy it and how's it going to work? Or will it save them? Will that be her plan works and that's the saving grace? But no, it's a Mike Flanagan movie. So no, people don't get saved all the time.
Nah. Sort of thing.
I think I like Katie Sackhoff as the mom, and I think the whole scene in the bedroom when she's chained and she's really crazed. Now
that was my next one. I was going to say, when one of the kids, I can't remember if it's the boy, I think, isn't it the boy? I can't remember.
No, it's her.
Is it her? Okay. Yeah. Goes into the bedroom, and all of a sudden, she goes to the other side of the bed, which you can't see what's on the other side of the bed. I love that trope. I use it in one of my books. And all of a sudden, the mother just lunges for her and is yanked back because she's got a chain around her neck, and she's like this feral beast. It totally scares the shit out of you.
And you immediately remember back to that flash in an earlier scene, like 20 minutes ago, when she was in the old deserted modern house or current house and looking out the window, and she turns and looks at the wall, and you see the hook and the eyelet and everything, the bolts for the chain. And then suddenly she looks back and it's not there. And you're going, what was that? I don't know.
Yeah, constant little hints and things all through this movie. It's just
the references work, all that.
It's one of those movies that requires multiple viewings to see everything and know exactly what he's doing with this trickery of two parallel timelines.
Yeah, he's very good at telling a past story. Well, because one of Flanagan's biggest tropes is haunted families. So not just is the occult part of this, but they have their own deficits or issues or whatever that either the supernatural plays up or that come into play in the story. Mm-hmm. And he's very big on having that. In this, it's her single-minded obsession with destroying this mirror. And it's the boy's constant try to reassurance that he's not crazy, that he didn't do what everybody said he did, but he has accepted the fact that he did. So very convoluted, but yeah.
Yeah. Another scene I had was the father is Alan Russell is his name. He's played by Roy Cochran. He has this habit after they've moved into the house of like picking his fingernails, and it's really like it's body horror. And it at one point he actually pulls one of his fingernails off, and it's just so gross. And then cut to the kids have no food because the mirror has possessed the parents. They're hungry. They even show them open the refrigerator and there's barely anything in it.
Right.
And they're like going to the neighbors to try to say, look, our parents are psychotic. Help us out. We're starving. And of course, what's the neighbor going to do? He's going to go back to the house to make sure everything's okay. And there's Alan at the door talking to the neighbor. The kids are upstairs watching him. But what you don't see is that his hand is on the inside jamb of the door, or actually the wall on the other side of the jamb. And it is completely bloody and just leaving bloody marks all over the wall. The whole time he is talking to this neighbor about, yeah, my kids are crazy or whatever.
Yeah, and he's smiling and going, oh, yeah, we'll take care of it.
We'll take care of it. Thanks for coming by. We'll play golf in a few days. Yeah, and then he shuts the door. He looks up at the kids. He doesn't even say a word. He just goes back into his office and shuts the door, and all they see is that bloody handprint there. He didn't have to say anything to them.
It was so good. So classic. Good horror. Good storytelling,
And that's a very keys are just bouncing out of me now. Okay, I'll just write it down and do it later.
Just write it down.
Yeah.
I also like, it's not really a scene, but it's really good writing, when she takes her brother to the house and it's covered up. She's mounted the mirror on the wall and brought in all this equipment and all this kind of stuff, but the mirror's covered. And when she uncovers it, I wrote down the line she says is, "Hello again. You must be hungry." And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah. There's also an interesting scene where they find the cameras are pointed together, pointed at each other.
Yeah.
And then they realize, looking back, that they're the ones that actually did that, and they have no memory of it.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
There's one that got me, that just the only little like, that doesn't make logical sense to me, but then again, the panic that they were feeling maybe makes sense. But later on, they say, we have to stay together, we have to stay together, we have to stay together. And I even wrote in my notes, doesn't make any difference if you stay together. You were together when you moved the cameras.
Right.
You don't remember that at all.
No, you're
so
right.
So it doesn't matter if you're together.
Yeah, I think it's just panic. I don't think they were thinking.
Yeah. There's good jump scares in this. There's great suspense. There's good tension. There's mystery enough because you're wanting to know, just like in Hill House, you're wanting to know what happened that night. What was the outcome of everything that night? And to literally, pardon the pun, mirror it so much to what
double
happens
pun
to him again, that he's taken away again at the end of this. And as he's driving away, you didn't mention the synopsis, as he's driving away, he looks and sees the victims in the house.
Right. Like when they were kids, they saw the other ghost. And then this time he sees his parents and Kaylee standing there as a ghost with the parents as they take him away.
Yeah. Which is, again, to your point, why didn't they make a sequel of this? But yeah.
Right, right. The mirror could end up in anyone's hands and you wouldn't even need a single same cast member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like you said, there's another, I guess it's a key, so to speak, it's an influence on Mike Flanagan. I've not really researched or seen if he is or was an alcoholic and has or had alcoholic family members.
He was. He's reformed. Yes. Yeah.
Drugs and alcohol are really big in his storytelling, too. Addiction in general.
Yeah, when we watched Midnight Mass a few years back, he talked about it because that shows about addiction as well.
Oh, yeah. In several ways, the lead character and the undercurrent of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the same way. The mother is obviously drinking quite a bit, but she thinks her husband's having an affair or cheating on her. Something's wrong.
We didn't mention that, but it's because Tim says he saw a woman in his dad's office. Yep. And it's a ghost. It's Marisol, played by Kate Siegel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because there is a history to the mirror. They only briefly kind of tap on it. She kind of mentions the Lasser mirror and its history. And we see that in a few images that she holds up. She's been researching this for, whatever, 20, 15 years. So she does kind of bing, 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 almost like a Pennywise sort of thing through history of the Lasser mirror and its influence on those who own it. One guy was obese, and suddenly the next picture you see of him a few years later, he's very thin and gaunt and all that. So,
yeah, if they did a sequel to it, they could have people do cameos as their past characters.
Yeah, of course.
All demonic. Well, I can move on to cast if you want, if you don't have any more scenes. Great, great cast. Mike Flanagan usually gets somebody maybe that is well known, but he always gets people that are very talented and he keeps them in his little secret of actors. They always turn up in future Mike Flanagan projects if he likes working with them, including the girl that played the child, Kaylee, in this. She's, I think, in Life of Chuck. I can't remember. I saw it somewhere. Karen Gillian, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, is the lead. She plays Kaylee as an adult. We know her as Nebula from Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers movies. So she is a Marvel movie actress. Oh, she's in Life of Chuck, too. And Life of Chuck is Flanagan's newest movie, folks, for those of you that don't know.
Because the daughter is in Life of Chuck as well.
Okay, yeah. So I was just realizing by the time people hear this, that movie has long gone and probably won awards because I'm hearing great things about it.
Yay, good.
Karen is Scottish. I did not realize that. This was her first American role.
And so, no wonder she's as popular as she is now because she was brilliant.
Not a trace of a Scottish accent at all. She was his first choice because Mike was a big fan of her on Doctor Who.
Yep.
She was on the Doctor Who season with Matt, what's his name?
Matt Smith.
I should remember that. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, Karen plays Kaylee. Brenton Thwaites plays Tim as an adult. And I don't know much about him. I think he's really good. And apparently he was in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. But I kind of stopped watching Pirates after the first couple, so I don't remember. He's also in Maleficent, so he's doing Disney movies. He is Australian.
There you go.
So you've got another foreigner, basically, doing an American accent. Katie Sackhoff is no stranger to genre fans out there. If you watched Battlestar Galactica, she was, what was her character's name?
She was Starbuck.
Starbuck, yeah.
She was the cross-gendered character in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, a lot of fans there. She has done tons of television and voice acting. She plays Marie, the mother, in this.
Mm-hmm. She's also in Mandalorian.
That's right. She sure is.
Yeah.
Rory Cochrane plays Alan Russell, the father. I kept thinking, who is this guy? I know this guy. And I looked him up. And I remembered him immediately. He was in Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey. He was one of the teenagers in it. The stoners. But a lot of you out there might know him now from Yellowstone because apparently he's on that show as well, which is very popular. And I saw him recently in a really creepy movie with Kerry Russell called Antlers. I don't know why I didn't do that for a genre week. I watch so many horror movies, I can't keep up with them all.
Wow.
Anyway, so he played Alan. Then we have young Kaylee, who was played by Annalise Basso. She is, let's see, there they are right there. She was in Ouija, Origins of Evil, which you, I think, watched fairly recently.
And she's great in it. She's
And really as good. An adult now, she is in Life of Chuck. So we will see her again. What, 12? No. It's like, 12 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, roughly. Garrett Ryan played young Tim. I don't really know anything about him. Sometimes child actors don't have long histories. And then the only one
I saw that he did, he was in one of the Insidious movies. So he stayed in the horror genre.
Yeah, that makes sense. James Lafferty, I don't really know very well. He played the fiance, Michael.
Yeah.
He was in Haunting of Hill House and looks a lot like the lead, but he's not the lead. He played a guy named Ryan in it.
Okay.
Stephen Crane was actually played by a guy named Weissman. And they look very similar. Michael Dumont played Dr. Sean Graham.
Mm, okay.
I'm sorry, not Michael Dumont. Michael Dumont was the character that James Lafferty played. Miguel Sandoval played Dr. Sean Graham, is what I meant to say. He was the older guy that was treating Tim before Tim's release from the asylum.
Okay, the psychiatrist.
Yeah, and I was like, he's a familiar face. Wonder what I've seen him in. Well, he was in Jurassic Park, Get Shorty, Clear and Present Danger. He's in all these big movies as a character actor. So that's why he looked familiar. And then another very familiar face is Mrs. Flanagan herself, Kate Siegel, who plays Marisol Chavez, the ghost. I think there's a picture over there.
And I did not even recognize her.
Yeah.
Until the credits. I did not recognize her at all. And I looked at the credits and went, damn, that's Katie.
Yeah. If you look over my shoulder, you can see her standing next to Rory.
Yeah.
And they've got those creepy mirror-like contact lenses in. She's been in everything that Mike directed, pretty much. She was in Hush, Hill House, Midnight Mass, and she's in Life of Chuck as well.
Good.
Love her.
She's great. She's really good. I loved her character in Hill House. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Theodora.
Yes.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I've said it a million times. She reminds me of Angelina Jolie.
And she was phenomenal in Usher, too.
Yeah, she was. She was Madeline. No, she wasn't Madeline. I can't remember who she was. Madeline was the...
was the sister. His sister, Madeline Usher.
Yeah, and she was played by the woman from Dances with Wolves, whose name I can never remember. Neither can you. We always forget her name. McDonald. Mary McDonald.
McDonald.
Yeah. Side tangents. Anyway, that's what I have for cast. As far as awards, this was nominated for several awards on the circuit. It won the 2015 Fango Chainsaw Award for Wide Release Horror Film and Best Supporting Actress for Sackoff. It also won a Fright Meter Award for Best Editing. And that's where someone recognized some talent there, because I was thinking this should win editing awards.
Definitely.
It is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. And I don't know, man. I'm like, if Flanagan ever gets as popular as I think he will be, it would not surprise me to see this on that list.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it should definitely be in the high percentage of any horror movie list, because it's just so well crafted all the way through. But then again, I love Usher and Midnight Mass.
Well, that's the whole problem with Mike Flanagan, is that most of his amazing projects are series and not films. He's done this. He's done Hush. He's done Dr. Sleep. But none of those are ever going to get recognized by the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. And it's a shame. He needs to be up there for something. Maybe Life of Chuck will be the one. Who knows?
Yeah, could be.
Did you?
Because it's not horror, right?
No, it's not.
Curious how they're going to promote that, or how they we'll figure it out. Just because if you attach Stephen King and Mike Flanagan to anything, you're going to assume horror. That's what both of their genres is.
Well, it's not too different with Stephen King and Frank Darabont.
I still say horror.
Do what now?
Oh, you're talking about Darabont, like with
Shawshank Redemption. Yeah.
True. Maybe they can play off that this isn't really, really scary. Yeah.
Did you have any other trivia before we move on?
The only trivia I had at all, you already did, which was the one about found footage. Several studios approached him and said, we'll be glad to fund this for you if you'll make it a found footage film. And he said no. And then there has been a lot of fandom stuff with the Lasser Glass. Other separate short stories and stuff like that where they've tried to expand on the Lasser Glass legend.
The just basically legend.
What we did here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny, you mentioned what I had mentioned, and I'm going to mention what you had mentioned, which is that this mirror appeared as an Easter egg in a lot of his movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the basement in Ouija, Origin of Evil. It's the headboard in Gerald's Game. It's on the walls of The Haunting of Hill House.
I did not know it was the headboard in Gerald's Game. That is cool.
Yeah, and it's in the Overlook Hotel in Dr. Sleep.
There you go.
Yeah.
To your point of keys, it is that's just like Sam Raimi's car.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think I've said that multiple times on this show, is that the Oculus mirror is Sam Raimi's car, basically. It appears in all the director's movies. Keys?
I've got my first key that I wrote down was X-Files. And it's because of the, even though it's gender reversed, at the very beginning when they first start into trying to get rid of this mirror, he's the one that doesn't believe, she's the one that does believe. And they go back and forth and back and forth about it. And she'll say something and suddenly he'll have the counter argument to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going, well, then prove it. Show it to me. And she can't really because she has to wait till it does something. He goes, so I guess maybe I'm right. And so there's a lot of that kind of Mulder Scully feel to it.
And not only do the characters Mulder and Scully, it could also be an X-Files episode. They would do an episode about a haunted mirror in a heartbeat.
Easily. This would be a great Chris Carter learned from this. Do it. Yes.
Well, ironic that you went to that genre of television anthology horror because the first one I have is Black Mirror. Because first of all, mirrors in the title. It's also black, which suggests something sinister. And a lot of those episodes too, could feature a movie like a common theme like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
That show deals with reflections in technology, doesn't it?
Yes.
Dark reflections in technology.
It's all dark technology the dark side of any technology.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we mentioned, of course, Hill House is very Bly Manor, all of Flanagan, Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. They all kind of have the Flanagan trope. So definitely this movie kind of influenced them because it was successful. And he went, hey, that works. But I also have one of your favorites, The Shining, because when he's talking to his wife and he's saying, look, when I'm in here working, I don't want anybody to come in here. And I was like, oh, it's Jack Torrance.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because I wrote it down just a minute ago when I was thinking about the way he was looking at the kids after the neighbor was there. It's very Jack Torrance.
Stare up and then just the walk into the office and close the door. Wendy.
When you mention other projects by Mike Flanagan, I do think Hill House is the standout. I mean, it's almost like he went from this to film Hill House because the ghosts look very similar. The dual plot line is the huge connection right there because there's a dual plot line with kids and adults in Hill House as well. So, yeah, I would say Hill House, out of everything he did, is more connected to this than anything.
Definitely. I've got it for two reasons. One, the kind of history of this
evil
artifact creating evil in all these people's lives going forward and everything else. And also the whole, when we finally get to the flashback where the kind of the two timelines join, when he's being taken away the night of and she says, we'll get back together. When we're big and strong, we'll get together and kill this thing, I think is what she says.
Something to that effect.
And so it's a very it sort of, if it comes back, we'll all come back together.
Yeah. I had not even thought about that, but you're right. It's just a smaller group. Two instead of six or whatever.
It's a duo. And they don't have to have sex with each other to beat the monster.
Yeah. That was in the book. That wasn't in the movie.
Hey, books are influences. Mm,
true, true. I have Moby Dick.
Interesting.
Because she is very Ahab in her obsession with the mirror and destroying the mirror.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
It's Ahab was obsessed with Moby Dick, and it ended up being his downfall. Well, this ends up being Kaylee's downfall, too.
Mm-hmm. I have, of course, an obvious one, which is Poltergeist. Anytime you have a haunted house, so to speak, like you even started, it to me lends very poltergeisty, because anything can happen in any room you're in at any time.
So that's funny that you say that, because I've got some that I copped from online. I was like, tell me about some haunted mirror stories. I was like looking for other ones that I might not be familiar with. And Poltergeist 3 is one of them.
It says
that it takes possession of reflections in mirrors, causing the reflections of people to act independently of their physical counterparts.
I don't remember that.
I don't think I've ever seen Poltergeist 3. It takes place in like a high rise.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, but only once, decades ago. So yeah. Interesting. That's a cool one though.
Yeah. I have some others that I dug up. Mm-hmm. Another one is that Flanagan was inspired, he says this himself, by H.P. Lovecraft. And the reason that he attaches to that mostly is that he does not explain the mirror's origins, because he likes how Lovecraftian literature always seemed to be an alien force that if you were trying to comprehend, you would go mad.
Yeah. Cosmic horror.
And he thinks that evil in the world does not have to have an answer. And that's kind of his philosophy of the mirror.
So. Yeah. And to an extent, the mirror is not only the antagonist of this story, it is almost like a monster, a creature. Marisol is kind of the embodiment of it.
Right.
But the mirror itself is terrifying. So it's a monster.
And it collects souls, for lack of better words, which is why she uses that line, I bet you're hungry, because it consumes people. And that's why you see Ghost in the window at the end, because it now has Kaylee.
Yeah, at the beginning, she establishes that it takes the plants first, then it takes any animals, then it attacks the humans. It like takes their life force or whatever, because all the stronger plants die. I do have, where is it? I put that in my other notes, whatever. Oh, like the Conjuring. If your dog doesn't want to go in the building, then don't go in the building. Something is wrong, because something will happen. If your dog gets sick or doesn't want to go, that's a sign. There's going to be evil here, so just don't do it. Because that's the first thing that happens in this. The dog dies.
So, true.
Yeah.
And that happens in The Conjuring. Another one I had to look up that I have seen, I had just forgotten because it has been... Well, the last time I saw this movie was in a drive-in theater. It was called The Boogeyman in 1980.
Wow.
It was a supernatural slasher film. Uh-huh. And the film refers to long-held superstition of boogeyman beings. Its plot concerns two siblings who are targeted by the ghost of their mother's deceased boyfriend, which is last seen. No, excuse me, which has been freed from a mirror. Sorry. Couldn't get it out. It's an old movie. Like I said, 1980. That's like Friday the 13th old. And I did see it at a drive-in. I don't remember it being very good. I remember somebody getting murdered in the driver's seat of a car.
Isn't there a Poe short story, like The Mirror of Ligeia or something like that? And that's her handheld mirror, though. It's her vanities in that.
There is a story about Ligeia. And there probably is a story about a mirror. I don't recall the titles intersecting.
Huh. I just think that was a Poe kind of reference.
Yeah. Poe in general, maybe.
Yeah. I've got Flowers in the Attic because of the whole mom's chained upstairs and nobody can go in the room. And,
speaking of old.
Yeah. That whole kind of, we have a... Because and I think the 70s were almost obsessed with that kind of trope. Because I remembered a television movie called The Shuttered Room. And it was the same thing. They had like a handicapped brother that they kept in the attic in some side room and everything and fed him through a crack in the door and all that. And he ends up getting out, and it's like the Frankenstein monster sort of story, but thing. But there were several that were in that. Our family has secrets that we don't want anybody to know about sort of thing.
Fine.
So that's kind of I don't think that's a Flanagan trope, but that was definitely a trope that was back there with all of the cursed family history stories.
I have one last one that I got from IMDb that, and you might not know this, but in 2015, B4U Television Network and I'm not sure how I pronounce that. Telefilms confirmed a Bollywood remake with the title Zahak. It was later retitled.
I can't wait for the dance numbers. This is going to be great.
It was later retitled to Debara, See Your Evil. This film was directed by Prawal Rahman and stars Huma Kirse. I don't know why I'm trying to pronounce all these names. Flanagan served as an executive producer, and it was released in 2017. So there is an Indian version of this movie out there.
Wow. I have one that's almost like that I don't... I have the topic of the key, but I don't have a typical key reference. So I kind of say this to everybody listening and watching. Give me an example of this, if you know of it, or Tim, you may too, of, because the whole trope of an unreliable narrator who's not sure of what's happening and we don't trust them, by the way, yada, yada, whatever. This has dual unreliable narrators. Like we said, by the end of this movie, like the last third of it, you don't know what's real and what's not and what to trust, because the mirror has such control over everything in its environment, both in the present and the past, that we are not sure if what we're seeing is reliable at all. So has there ever been another movie or a book with dual unreliable narrators?
Oh, I couldn't name one. And it would, and I guess it's... Narrators, unreliable narrator is the term for literature, but for a film, I guess it would be unreliable cinematographer. I don't know. What would you call it? A director?
Well, and I think the first time I ever heard about it, though, was in reference to a movie, which was Sunset Boulevard.
Well, yeah, very much so.
That's an unreliable narrator because he starts it being dead.
But it is a narrator because William Holden, as that character, does narrate the movie.
But the protagonists in this are both the narrators. Essentially, we get her point of view and her memory. Then we get the boy's memory.
Right. I mean, I'm being nitpicky, but they don't dictate it. They don't say, and then this happened, which the narrator in Sunset Boulevard does say that.
Right. You don't get the voiceover of, and then the mirror took possession of mommy.
Right. And in Sunset Boulevard, he's very smart alecky talking about hanging out with this old broad in this house where they're having a monkey funeral.
Yep.
But yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know what the term would be for that with a film, though.
Mm-hmm.
When it's not someone narrating, it would be more like a, I don't know. I don't know what you would call that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But those are the key references we got, right?
It is. That's all I've got.
And so all of you out there listening and watching, we'd love to hear any references that you might have or think about. Leave them in the comments down below. Email us. Let us know what you guys think. Both Tim and I like this movie, obviously. We both highly recommend it, and anything by Mike Flanagan, of course, because he's one of my personal favorites as far as the horror genre goes. And I think that if you haven't watched any of his other stuff, like we've been mentioning all this, Hill House, Ouija... Especially Midnight Mass and especially
House and if you have Netflix, most of these series are on there.
Yeah, and you can find them. Even his Midnight Club one, which is like a YA goosebumpy horror thing, was still good and competent. So I highly recommend anything he's done. And let us know your comments down below. We would love to hear from you guys. Also, if you're interested in supporting us and helping us keep this going, we do have a Patreon, and we have free material over there as well as some tiered material, including two different other podcasts that incorporate that. One's on the X-Files. It's called the X-Files Declassified. And then the Dilithium Chamber, we delve deep into Star Trek, the classic series, and all the good Star Trek stuff, not the recent Star Trek stuff. Anyway, that's just my opinion. But Tim, until next time, when hopefully we'll be away from scary mirrors and into something different.
Oh, we are. It's very different.
Okay. Cool.
But it's not unlike some of our themes from past seasons. We've seemed to be gravitating to at least one or two of these movies every season now.
Sweet. Yeah. We'll have to. And so, okay, a key reference to next week will be some past seasons for us.
Think world ending.
There you go. It's yeah. Apocalypse.
Think
time.
Realistic sci-fi.
All right. Well, I will see you then.
All right. I'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.